My name's Andy Gordon. Originally, I'm from the UK, specifically the Pusey Vale.
You're living now in Dunedin, which is in the South Island, and this is not far from Christchurch, where the mosque massacre took place. Can you just tell us a little bit about the connections between Dunedin and this guy Brenton Tarrant, who's been convicted for the massacre? Now, just to say, we ought to say something about it. It was 15th of March, 2019. Two separate mass shootings, apparently done by the same person, on two mosques in Christchurch. Apparently, a lone gunman into both mosques during Friday prayers, and in the afternoon on that Friday. And I think it's just over 50 people were shot dead by this guy. In the reports, there was a lot of quite a lot of reporting, obviously, of it, but there was, I think, pretty much only the Sun and maybe one or two other newspapers showed a bit more detail, which is the fact that this guy had a load of very peculiar scrawlings and scribblings all over his gun, all over his pack, in his car, and these are most definitely were all sorts of clues as to who he was and what he was doing. But anyway, back to you. What was the connection with Dunedin?
Yeah, so basically, it turns out afterwards, it turns out that he was living in Dunedin, and he was there's a small town just outside of Dunedin, which would be more classed as a village, I'd say, in the UK. It's a pretty small place. And he was a member of a gun club down there. So he's a resident of Dunedin, basically.
So this gun club, what sort of character was that? Was that your ordinary sort of New Zealand farmers and people like that there?
Well, I'm sure there were a few farmers, but basically, from the research that I've done, is there is a great article from Time magazine, which seems strange that this you have to go all the way to America to get a good article on a gun club in Dunedin. But yeah, so basically, there's an article which says that there was a former army personnel who went to the gun club. And he was pretty worried about what he saw, and he pretty much said that this is a sort of neo-Nazi club. And they were asking, when they found out that he'd been in the military, they were kind of, asking him questions, how many ragheads have you killed? And basically,
Yeah, right.
it pretty
Yeah,
much alarmed him, it
it
alarmed him
sounds
enough
quite
to go to the police.
most gun clubs are not that politicized, where they're
No.
actually, sort of serious racists within the club who are almost, proudly talking to new members to make sure that they're kind of part of the same mindset. I mean, that's pretty shocking. But the other thing about
Yeah.
the massacre itself, I think, important not to brush over that some of these matters is that he streamed the whole massacre live on Facebook, which is, to me, is just obviously a very, very sick thing to have done. But in a way, useful to investigators, to detectives, or whatever, because there's a whole lot of evidence in there. And that the pretty much straight away, the New Zealand police, the New Zealand government, made it a crime to possess this. I mean, I think they were expecting that you were just going to be passing it around amongst children, but there wasn't any sort of specific thing in that saying that if you were using it to investigate the crime, that you weren't allowed to possess the video. I mean, obviously, you don't want it necessarily up there and available easily, but making it a crime to possess it is a pretty strange and bizarre thing. For something that's
Yeah,
actually
definitely.
evident, evidence to do with this crime. Now, having been through it, and I think it was Max Egan over in Australia that did a similar thing. You can quite simply freeze frames in the video, and you can see these figures in red, dressed in red, on three different occasions that I figured out on there, where it looks as if they are actually directing him. So it's interesting to me. I mean, we had this with Anders Behring Breivik, who did the massacre in similar sort of massacre, actually, this time of left-wing trade unionists over in Norway, where we're told it's a lone wolf, and yet then we then find out, oh, he's a Freemason. And so obviously he's got other associates that need properly looking into and explaining. You know, he's a member of a secret society. Well, you can't really necessarily say the guy's a lone wolf if he's also in a secret society until you've, you know, bottomed out who else he was. Anyway, so...
Well, interestingly on that point, Tony, is what's very interesting is, I mean, as soon as the massacre had happened, they rolled out the president of this gun club, and they actually said that, oh, you know, this Tarrant guy was, you know, he didn't speak to anybody. All he was interested in was seeing how many rounds he could get off in a minute. He wanted to see how fast he could shoot. You know, that's what that was the line, you know, on the mainstream media here, which and then now, strangely, the gun club shut down also immediately after. As well, and I'm pretty much guessing that it hasn't reopened. I mean, I don't know that for certain, but you know, they pretty much, you know, they said, oh no, this guy's nothing to do with us. He came to the club but didn't speak to anybody, which I find hard to believe.
I mean, that's almost as if they're trying to sort of step away from the whole thing and discourage anyone from inquiring further. But anyway, I know you were telling me you had an encounter with someone who you thought was a sort of similar character to this Tarrant guy. I mean, I think it's, you know, we have been over the last few months looking into this since I was prompted to do it by David Livingstone, the author of Transhumanism, the History of a Dangerous Idea, of this group called the Order of the Nine Angles, which I mean I've kind of termed it Satanic Gladio, the idea that you've got these an actual satanic group who their aim is to go out there and actually create these massacres as kind of fake lone wolves, because what they're encouraging them to do is to say, well, look, you know, operate on your own, but here are your orders, you know, here are your rules. Well, quite clearly, you know, they are not a lone wolf if they're getting their orders and rules from somebody. And especially, which I found the most shocking about looking into all of this, is if this is a UK-originated, UK-based group, which the Home Office haven't actually seen fit to ban.
Like, from listening to you, you've done a really good job on putting the truth out there. And from my perspective, this is the kind of the evidence to back that up. And my experience was basically, I was the day of the shooting, I was down in Dunedin Central, and you know, we have in the UK you'd probably call it a marketplace, in France you'd probably call it a town square. Dunedin we call it the Octagon, just because of its shape. And I was walking through there, and yeah, just for some reason, I mean, there was just nobody else on this footpath which leads through the square, and either side of me was actually a protest going on about climate change from school children. And just coming towards me was a probably a 6'2", short blonde hair guy with full army uniform and jack boots, basically. This is probably around lunchtime. I was down there to get my lunch.
So you're talking about Hitlerian style jack boots, is that what you...
Yeah. Great big, cute, you know, proper full-on Nazi jack boots. Just his uniform alone, to start with, when I first clocked him, I would, you know, I thought it was a military personnel, you know, obviously, maybe, you know, just left the army base or whatever, I don't know. But just as he got closer, this uniform was just, you could just tell it's like really bad quality. It's not a genuine military uniform, if you know what I mean.
You know, sort of made of crinoline or something. I mean, it does. Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, you just generally do not get members of the armed forces in uniform around in most countries. Occasionally, I noticed one of the only places regularly you do see them was when I was visiting Moscow in 2015. You do see a lot of uniform. Oh, yeah.
Put it this way, Tony. Right? You know, I've been in Dunedin on and off for 10 years or longer than 10 years actually now, but I've been here, you know, permanently for at least over 5 years now, and I've never once seen anybody in uniform, especially no one, you know, looking pretty much like a Nazi, you know. So yeah, and I haven't seen anyone since that day, and it just happens to be the day of this massacre in Christchurch. And obviously Tarrant was from New Dunedin, you know. So yeah, I mean, I just put the two and two together, really, you know. And this has to be about, I'd say, about an hour before the massacre took place, you know. I think it's around that sort of time frame, you know, which and just you know, honestly, like the hair on the back of my neck stood up, you know. And I was, you know, just chilled me to the bone seeing this guy. And I honestly thought he was going to do something, you know. It's no word of a lie. And as I walked past him, you know, our eyes were sort of locked onto each other. And what was running through my head, because, you know, this is before the massacre had taken place. And what was running through my head was, I was kind of worried about all these school children around, you know, having this protest. And I sort of looked behind to see where he'd gone. And he was sort of doubling back on himself and going around the back of the protest. And I thought, that's a very strange direction to take, because he's sort of, you know, going to come back round.
God.
You know, so... And yeah, honestly, I was on the verge of phoning the police. That's how worried I was, you know.
Well,
and I'm not...
It sounds very un-New Zealand. And I think if I'm right, you're describing a protest where the school kids were, this is a Greta Thunberg inspired thing, where they were, they'd have a strike for an afternoon or a day or something, and they go into the town square and protest about the climate, which is actually quite a sweet thing for them to do, whether it's right or wrong, you know. It's nothing to do with us, but yeah, I mean, this is very un-New Zealand, isn't it? Someone like this appearing, you know, in your vision and acting in this kind of peculiar way, circling around behind the kids.
Yeah, well, yeah, very un-New Zealand. And, you know, I think part of the problem is why the government has covered all of this up is because they don't want people knowing that there's groups like this out there, you know, I think. But, I mean, I think the best thing is to be open about it and say, you know, there are these people around. You know, it's pretty worrying that they are around, but I mean, you have to, you know, if you confront it, you can do something about it. You know, that's what I think.
Well, no, you're quite right. And I think, you know, certainly from where I'm looking at this 09A, Order 9 angles, I mean, it seems to be embedded in the Western states. I mean, I can't understand why a terrorist group in the UK, which has been involved in attacks, found to be planning attacks, is just allowed to kind of carry on. And it might be difficult to, you know, you might find that they're mainly an online thing, you know, in which case, obviously, it's not so easy to shut them down. But yeah, so what do you think, you know, about the massacre itself? What was the point of it? And what, you know, what was going on there, do you think?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I've seen, I think New Zealand is well behind the times on, you know, this kind of terror legislation, you know, the powers to, you know, arrest people and hold people on suspicion of this, that, and the other, you know. And, you know, and since that attack, and there's been another one fairly recently from a Sri Lankan guy. And now the legislation is going through, you know, at last. And probably New Zealand is one of the last countries to have this sort of legislation go through. So I think, you know, it's linked to that, isn't it? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So, these countries are linked through what they call the Five Eyes, which is these intelligence. And I can remember hearing from I've heard over the years from various sources that you can only really join these Five Eyes group if you cede your control of your entire intelligence services to the organization. So that is to say, basically, the Americans, you know, the national security.
I think it's driven by the Americans, isn't it? You know, I mean, I because actually there was a debate, you know, good few years ago, because obviously since 9/11 they've been introducing these different laws here and there, and they were talking about it in New Zealand, I think, you know, quite a while ago. I can't remember how long ago. It was probably 8 years ago or so. And actually, everybody said, no, we don't need that in New Zealand. you know, but since the attacks, I think people's opinion have changed. If you ask the normal average New Zealander now, they're going to say, oh yeah, you know, we're going to stop people like, you know, Tarrant and, you know, terrorists and stuff, you know, committing these crimes. So, you know, that's how they do it, isn't it?
Well, certainly, it certainly appears to be. But I mean, this does imply that the intelligence people are kind of running the show, and also that maybe they are behind the terrorist attack that brings in the legislation that they want, does it?
Well, that is one possibility, you know, that is definitely a possibility. You know, we can't 100% say that, but there's a distinct possibility that that's what's going on. Yeah.
OK, so what was going through your mind when this guy was coming towards you?
Well, you know, just yeah, pretty scared, to be honest. You know, it's pretty unnerving sort of thing, you know. It just, you know, you just get a feeling sometimes, and it's kind of a sixth sense, isn't it, you know? And another point I'd like to mention about him is you know, his uniform looked very fake and cheap and nasty, you know, something you'd probably buy off, I don't know, there must be some website where you can buy that type of stuff. But
yeah, the backpack, like Prince Harry's thing that he wore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's sort of something like that, that he, you know. But the interesting thing, which really worried me, was he had this black backpack on. And just looking at that black backpack just looked really good quality. And it's the sort of thing you could imagine is designed to carry weapons and whatnot in. You know, it's so, yeah, and just I just had that thought running through my head somehow, you know, of all these sort of school massacres and so on in America. And yeah, I was literally on the verge of calling the police. And yeah, I don't know, I just kept going. And yeah, I didn't do it because I thought, well, you know, what are they going to do? They probably won't believe me and all the rest of it. But yeah, and obviously nothing happened in Dunedin. But the thing is what we have to also realized is the police managed to, they got Tarrant, and his plan was to drive back to Dunedin, and he was going to stop, there's a town halfway from Dunedin to from Christchurch to Dunedin, and he was going to stop in a place called Ashburton and attack the mosque there, and then he was going to carry on to Dunedin. And what he was going to do in Dunedin we don't know, but I mean, he did, well, apparently the reason he ruled out the mosque in Dunedin is because he didn't want to kill any Muslim students who were studying here, because we are, you know, university town. So that's from what, well, I've read, you know.
Well, maybe, I mean, good god, I mean, it just sounds like a bit of a speculative guesswork there that someone's having. It might be that he got arrested before he got back. But anyway, I mean, there are all sorts of speculation about whether he could have actually carried out this mosque attack, but going actually traveled between the two mosques. And also, probably the most important is, I remember immediately there were news stories circulating which had been put out by the New Zealand, I suppose their equivalent of special branch or whatever in the UK, or the security services, that three arrests had been made, and then that was quickly changed to only one arrest. So, I mean, is it possible that the guy that you saw may have been potentially have been arrested too?
No, I believe that he probably was, because, you know, although I said, you know, there was nobody around at that time, I mean, we're talking about the central city, you know, and we're a city of 120,000 people, you know, so, and there's kids all around, and there must be a few teachers around. Now, there must be some other people who saw him, you know. He didn't just appear, you know, in the central square. You know, he must have walked through other streets where, you know, I saw people around at that time. So, you know, someone could have reported him, and he you know, he could have been picked up. You know, well, who knows how long he was around.
I mean, I would suggest that once this happened, the authorities were very quickly on to Tarrant. They may have even been keeping an eye on him anyway before he did the massacre. It's quite possible that's happened quite a lot, that they're keeping tabs on these people. The tactics I've been told, the tactics that he used on that attack on those mosques were the exact same tactics used by special forces. So in other words, using these guys dressed in a specific way, the red people dressed in red on the, directing it, certainly looked as if we're directing him on that. He could have been part of a special forces team. And I think, am I right in saying that he had actually travelled extensively around the world, including to Israel, in the intervening years before he ended up in Dunedin?
Yeah, that's correct. So, obviously I took an interest in this afterwards and I read quite a lot. And he was well funded, but his money actually came from his father who had died, and he left him $500,000. And he basically went around the world, visiting different Nazi groups, let's say. And, he was in Russia. They say he didn't go to Ukraine, but I mean, he could have crossed the border quite easily. And he was in Sri Lanka and Pakistan and various other places, I think. So, he'd been around. And, it seems very strange, doesn't it, that this lone wolf would suddenly just decide to move to Dunedin and not make any friends or anything like that. Is it's a bit far fetched, isn't it? He came here for a reason, and he apparently applied for the gun club before he even arrived in New Zealand. Mm. So that's
so. How long had he been living here before the massacre then?
I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, I think it's probably, 6 months to a year. I think it's quite a while. I think,
I mean, I suppose stepping back from all of this, we've got all sorts of questions. Number one has got to be, if this group, you and I, lay people can look at this and put these bits and pieces together about it. It seems incredible to me that so little of this has been, investigated, looked at by the press and actually by the government itself, exposed by the government, these neo-Nazi groups. There's one thing specifically I can remember from looking at the articles in The Sun, which showed photographs of Tarrant's equipment, gun, etc., was the Nazi Black Sun on there. Now, the idea is that actually this is an SS symbol, and that if this guy was a complete lone wolf, was he just someone who learned about the SS from a book and decided to paint it? Or of course, as we know, there all are these neo-Nazi networks out there all over the world. Carry on.
Well, I'd say 100% they are all over the world, and we know. I was watching a documentary, a New Zealand documentary, and they there's definitely 300,000 of these people in New Zealand. Maybe they're not all of, to the same level. There's varying levels of racism and neo-Nazism, but we know that they are out there. And for a country of 5 million, 300,000 is quite a good number, isn't it?
Well, it's or a bad number.
or a bad number. Yeah, that's
quite
true.
A lot.
It's quite a lot anyway.
The other thing is, it does seem to me that, the Nazi connection makes me immediately think about the attempt to get these religions fighting with each other. Now, I certainly witnessed that living in Northern Ireland during the Troubles, where you could see that there were extremist factions, particularly on the Protestant, or I prefer to call them the Unionist or Loyalist side, really. Extremist factions that would do these sectarian killings of just anybody, including kids, who were from the other side, in other words, from the nationalist side in Ireland. And, also, of course, in Ireland, they have this religious aspect to it as well. The idea that all these religious nutters are killing each other. Well, actually, what was happening was there was an attempt to get a religious war started, just as we saw, say, for example, with the Manson killings and Sharon Tate in the United States, again, with this satanic kind of angle, getting blacks and whites killing each other. That was the idea of having these so-called black people murdering white people over in the States. They were trying to get this conflict going. And it seems to be pretty obvious that that's what's going on with these sorts of killings of Muslims, because what it does is it did exactly what happened with the nationalists in Northern Ireland, is it acts as a recruiting sergeant for groups like ISIS and the extreme Islamic faction. And that can't happen without these neo-Nazi people going in and murdering a load of people of a particular faith. So anyway, what do you make up, just as a complete, like, out there question of the motives? Because I've just sketched out what I think's going on here. There's an attempt to get these religions fighting each other. What do you think?
Yeah, well, that's a possibility, because I mean, you know, I think these Nazi groups, I mean, they seem to be going after the Muslims, which is kind of a new idea for Nazis, isn't it? You know, so yeah, and obviously that idea has been put in their head, because I mean, what they believe is that they believe these Muslims are going to come to your country and they're going to take over the country. That's what they believe.
And it's funny, isn't it, that back in the Second World War, we had, you know, the Nazis massacring Jews. And, you know, funnily enough, it's just bizarre, isn't it? Because they had the demonization of Jews in Nazi Germany. And now we've got the same old Nazis. They've decided now most of the Jews in Europe have been, you know, exterminated. Now we're going to start picking on the Muslims. You know, so there's been all these attempts to frame Islam for something which is, you know, say, for example, the 9/11 attacks, there was a whole attempt to sort of get the, you know, blame this on these Muslim Al-Qaeda terrorists or whatever. Well, it turns out actually there was all sorts of other stuff going on in New York, like the Twin Towers being brought down by explosives and the aircraft being swapped in midair as they're flying around America. And the aircraft that actually flew into the Twin Towers were these grey military planes, which were almost certainly drones. So a lot of trickery in order to get people to hate Muslims.
Yeah.
Amazing amount of effort. And I just, I find it mad in a way that you've got this whole thing was going on in the 30s against the Jews. Now it's going on against the Muslims and nobody seems to have noticed.
That's it. And and no one's noticing because it's not being reported. And they're turning a blind eye. You know, the governments are turning a blind eye to these groups and so on. And the media is turning a blind eye, aren't they? You know, And I mean, one theory is, you know, have you heard about this Tony Blair? He's trying to bring Christians and Muslims together and all this and start a new religion.
Oh, lovely. Oh, are they going to be worshipping Tony?
It could well be, yeah. I mean, I don't know. possibly.
Is he going to start a war criminals religion for war criminals that need salvation or something?
Well, that's right. He's going to be the new, dictator or pope, or I don't know what he is going to be. But obviously he's going to have his place in the order or whatever.
Well, he probably will. God almighty. But look, since the actual massacre took place, have you seen anybody hanging out in Dunedin in the, you know, the years since 2019 looking anything similar to this guy?
No, I haven't seen anybody. You know, I haven't seen before that date. I haven't seen anybody after that date. I haven't seen anybody, you know. And My theory really is there's a good chance that they picked that guy up and maybe, you know, one of his mates or whatever. And the thing is, they haven't got anything to charge them on. So they have to really let them go, don't they? You know, because they obviously nothing happened in Dunedin. So, you know, maybe there was a plan or so, you know, but we don't know. And because they had to release them, they don't want to worry the public that, you know, these people are walking, you know, they're still walking around Dunedin somewhere. You know, obviously not in their uniforms, but they must be still around, I imagine. Mm. You know, so, I mean, that's how I think, you know, this happened.
Well, the other thing is, of course, that the authorities don't want to reveal if there was a whole team of neo-Nazis behind this there.
Well, exactly. You know, they don't want that information out there. And like I was telling you earlier, it seems down here in the far south of Dunedin is a lot of these, it seems like these neo-Nazis quite like it down here because it's a very white place. You know, there's not many, there's not too many foreigners here. And, you know, the town where the gun club was, I mean, there wouldn't be, the only foreigner that'd be there is the Chinese running the fish and chip shop, and there might be an Indian running a Indian restaurant, and that would be it there, you know. So that town where the gun club is probably about an hour outside of Dunedin further south. So it's very, you know, it's just a small town, like I say, probably a small village.
Well, it sounds UK a little standards. Bit like Cornwall in the UK, where it's almost like the further down the south of Cornwall you go, the more right wing the various, and a lot of right wing people. I remember I bumped into, well, we were staying in a B&B, which was run by the Duke of Edinburgh's helicopter pilot, bizarrely. He said, "Oh, yes, I'm retired. I used to, you know." And as I was walking down the corridor in this B&B, there's a great big black and white photograph in a frame of Oswald Mosley. This is an interesting.
Really?
Interesting. I know. So these sort of areas do exist. Anyway, I hope you can keep an eye on what happens down there for us, and keep in touch, Andy. Anyway, yep. Thanks ever so much for joining us. And if you want to just, are there any blogs? Because I know one of the best, actually, that it was Max Egan in Australia that did one of the best pulling apart of the massacre, including a good look at the band video so that everyone else doesn't have to look through it, but pulling out the evidence that Tarrant didn't act alone.
Yeah, that's true. You can look up Max Eden, I guess. But yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm just coming forward with this information to you just to, you know, back up really what you've been saying for the last few months on your show, you know.
Okay, so, well, it's very nice. But have you got any, I mean, it's just always nice to get tips of good sites around the world. I mean, I used to, years ago, read Ivan Fraser's Truth Campaign. I mean, this must be, gosh, late 80s, early 90s, something like that. And, you know, and sometimes you get really obscure little publications, obscure websites, blogs, that have got absolutely brilliant information. I mean, there were quite a lot of those through the COVID. I'm just giving you a chance, if you can, please, just to point us towards a couple of sites where you think, you know, have got decent information.
Yeah, well, I used to follow a few people, but to be honest, Tony, I mostly follow you these days.
And
because, you know, I mean, I think you have to, you know, obviously... Well, I mean, if you're into COVID stuff, I'm following Dr. John Campbell, which you obviously mentioned quite a few times. But yeah, you know, I think your top man there, Martin, is one of the best I've heard, you know, and I've tried them all because, you know, you have to be careful when you are listening to this sort of stuff, because there's a lot of BS out there. Mm. But there is some truth in there as well, you know. So I think you guys do a really good job. And yeah, I think you should probably let Martin have a bit more of a say sometimes.
Well, I understand that. But the thing is, not to get too deeply into this, but we've got to actually get from topic to topic to topic.
Yeah, obviously, I understand that. Yeah, but I mean, he's one of the few people I'd say that. You know, he can pick out the truth from something, and his analysis is pretty good, I'd say.
It is extremely good. And I can remember when I first met him, before we were doing the radio program, sitting listening to him analyzing stuff and thinking, this is the guy. When I was as a researcher on Greater London Radio, constantly you're looking around, I want to get someone really good on this topic. If I'd have only known Martin then, he would have been all over London regularly. Anyway, Andy, thanks ever so much for joining us. And keep in touch. If you see any more of these guys in these crinoline uniforms with little swastikas on in Dunedin, please do let us know. I suppose after phoning the local cops there.
That's right. Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks for having me on.